Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGiulio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Allstate Skyline studio on a Thursday morning. Triple Play Thursday. Get your requests in now, and that's one artist, three songs, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. A little bit later on, we're going to be talking about what acts would you like to see have a reunion and go on tour. And also, if you've gone on any of these nostalgia tours or seen some of the acts that used to be popular, how do they still hold up? We'll get into some of that and more. Our phone number is 312-981-7200 right here on WGN. All right, right now, it is time for our biweekly visit with Dan Feinberg, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And we talk TV every couple of weeks, and there's always a lot of TV to talk about. So let's welcome Dan back to the show. Hey, Dan, how are you?
I'm okay. How are you doing, Nick?
Pretty good. Pretty good. So lots of TV, as always, to talk about.
So much TV. So much TV.
All right. Well, let's start with something that I'm really, really curious about, and I've watched the trailers for it. I want to talk about the Haunting of Hill House on Netflix. Let's talk a little bit about that. Tell us about that.
Excellent. I'm glad that we get to start with something that's actually decent, and then we can talk about the ongoing nightmare that is the broadcast premiere.
Yeah, slate. And I watched a few. I watched a few of the premieres. Dan, we'll have some stuff to talk about for sure. So,
So the Haunting of Hill House is, of course, based on the classic Shirley Jackson novel of the same name, which is one of the most seminal sort of haunted house texts out there, and has been an influence on pretty much everything in the genre subsequently.
And it's one of my favorite books of all time. So,
and it's based, let's say, loosely. Like, don't go in expecting really all that close at all. It's more inspired by or in the vicinity of, however you want to put it. Anyway, it is adapted for television by Mike Flanagan, who has been slowly building up a reputation as a horror auteur, and he did the very solid Netflix adaptation of Gerald's Game, which gets credit for basically finding any way whatsoever to adapt one of Stephen King's most unadaptable books. And so it's a story about a family that moves into an old house in western Massachusetts, and they begin to do renovations, as you do, and turns out that the house has dark secrets, and 20 years into the future, in the present day, the siblings are still dealing with the things that they experienced in the house, and one of the siblings is being drawn back to the house by unseen forces, and wouldn't you know it, soon they'll all be going back for a final reckoning in Hill House. And, sorry, I somehow got carried away with the ominous trailer voice.
Right.
And it's not the kind of show that television does all that frequently. It's not like there aren't horror shows on television. We could just go back to Twin Peaks last summer, which really at its heart was very often a horror show.
Oh, yeah.
It was one of the scariest, freakiest shows ever on television.
Yep,
but
all I got to say is episode 8. That's all I got to say.
Which is as disturbing as a TV show gets. But this is a haunted house movie, elongated over 10 hours. Mike Flanagan directed all 10 hours, and the thing that is most impressive about it is that it really does not wear out its welcome. It starts out creepy, it has jump scares, and if you know the genre, I don't know that anyone is entirely anti-jump scare, but I know that many aficionados of the genre feel like they get overused in today's horror movies. And this is something that pops up a bunch throughout the series, but there's a lot of other stuff going on. There's general kind of creepy, crawly, gore-type scares. There's kind of primal stuff like, bugs and that sort of stuff. It's just effectively creepy for much longer than you would think it would be. Mm. Each of the 10 episodes, and I've seen the entire first season, features at least two sort of jump or jolt type moments. And it's got a surprisingly, well, not surprisingly, because, people like being in horror movies, it's got a very good cast. And so The cast includes Carla Gugino, who can do very little wrong,
yep.
as the matriarch of the family. Henry Thomas plays her husband in the flashback scenes, and then Timothy Hutton plays the role in later scenes. And on one hand, that's spectacular casting because they look an awful lot alike, and you can understand that. On the other hand, the age difference between them is really much smaller than the show seems to think it is, and I got confused several times by why Timothy Hutton was playing an old version of Henry Thomas, but and the rest of the cast is just very, very solid as well. People will recognize Michael Huseman from Game of Thrones and Tremé. He's very good. People will recognize Elizabeth Reeser from a lot of things. There's a cast of just kids, basically, who are all tremendous and who do exactly everything you would want from a horror movie child. They're empathetic. They're emotional. They get you caught up and instantly into the world because we all wish to protect little children in these movies and shows. So yeah, it's really very effective. To me, it ran out of energy a little bit in the home stretch, but there's a lot going on here, and I was impressed by how well it held up.
That's great. That's great news. And is it streaming now or is it this weekend?
It is streaming starting on Friday.
Okay,
and,
good.
I think people are really going to dig this show. Netflix sort of last year gave everyone their Halloween streaming option with Stranger Things,
right.
And that was great. And then they subsequently turned around and they didn't have a season of Stranger Things this year. I think that as horror programming goes, this is much more purely scary, creepy, crawly. It's not as fun or as funny or certainly not as nostalgic,
right.
But I think for Halloween fear and frights, it'll do well by audiences.
That's fantastic. That's my favorite genre, by the way. So this is also my favorite time of year. So I'm really looking forward to it. And so my weekend plans are pretty much set because I'm going to see First Man, Bad Times at El Royale, and then I'll be watching this. and SNL. So that's pretty much my weekend right there.
It's all gone. There goes the weekend. So much for time off, man.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Well, let's talk a little bit about Better Call Saul, which is a show that I'm way behind on. But it wrapped up its fourth season, and I'm assuming you loved it.
I liked it very, very much.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well,
you really need to catch up. I don't know when you're going to find the time, but got to catch up.
Yeah, I understand. But tell everybody about how you felt about this season. And you've been covering it really closely, talking with people who've worked on the show throughout the season. So talk a little bit about your season with Better Call Saul.
Well, I don't do this all that much. We have lots of great writers who do kind of regular weekly show coverage on Hollywood Reporter's live feed blog, and I really only do this when there are shows where I like digging into them, and I know that the people working on the shows put as much effort into thinking about the show they're making as I put into trying to sort of unpack everything. And so really in recent years, what I've done weekly interviews on have been this, Better Call Saul, and Fargo, because those are just shows where everybody involved is kind of on the same page and has things to say. And Better Call Saul, just, it is such a top-to-bottom, calculated, thought-out, planned-out show, and this season was like that. It continued Jimmy McGill's journey into becoming Saul Goodman, and that's not a spoiler in any way. That's where we know the whole thing is going, but this season probably featured Bob Odenkirk at his very best. Ray Seahorn, I promise you, if you get into Better Call Saul, you will love Ray Seahorn so much because she is so good and so fundamentally underrated that she has not yet received an Emmy nomination or any sort of awards recognition for the show is just a crime. And I hope that this is the year that changes it, because this was so very much her season, in addition to Bob Odenkirk, who's always great. it's just a good show. It's a show that is always smartly written, smartly directed. It looks wonderful. It's one of the best shot shows on television. It's also a brilliantly edited show. I mean, I interviewed the show's editor, and I don't do that very often, and I'm not sure I honestly did it all that well, because the thing about editing is that if you're not in the room, you don't necessarily know what an editor has to work with, so you don't know what they do. But we talked a lot about montages, and that was a fun conversation to have, so why not? But yeah, I mean, over the course of a full season, I talked to 10 people from the show, and I talked to actors, writers, directors, and again, one editor, and it was a pleasure each week, because everybody was smart and everybody had things to say about the show that were intelligent things to say. And when you have a cast and crew of intelligent people all on the same page, you can see it on the screen, and I think you can see the opposite just as frequently.
Yeah, that's true. Now the show itself, do they have an end? Do they have an end in sight? Do they know when it's going to end? I mean, is it going to be 2-3 more seasons? One season? What are they thinking?
If I had to guess, I would guess it's probably going to be 2 more seasons, but that is 100% a guess. I interviewed showrunner Peter Gould for the finale, and they already have a renewal for 5th season, so they're fine. And he admitted that they've had, it sounded like, very loose conversations with AMC and with Sony about how long the show has to go. And I don't think it's a show that can last forever, because we know eventually it's going to hit the timeline of Breaking Bad, and that's where it's going. It just can't take forever to get there, because it's a prequel, and yet the actors keep on aging, and it's in some cases a tiny bit distracting. And they keep bringing in people from the Breaking Bad universe. They have yet to totally give up and bring in Bryan Cranston or Aaron Paul or Anna Gunn or any of the biggest stars from the show, but they've definitely brought in a lot of the supporting players and a lot of the interesting character actors from that world. I would guess 2 seasons, 3 at the max. They're smart, and smart shows and showrunners very rarely dramatically overstay their welcome, and I assume they will not. I think they know where they have to get this show, and they will figure out exactly how long it's going to take them to get there.
Does it get good numbers? I don't think it doesn't get as good numbers as Breaking Bad did, does it?
No, it doesn't. It definitely not towards the end, when Breaking Bad became a phenomenon.
Right.
But people kind of forget that there were 3 or 4 seasons where Breaking Bad was a somewhat stumbling little critical darling show with mediocre ratings, in the same way that Mad Men was basically for its entire run. And then there was this remarkable thing that happened when Breaking Bad went to Netflix, and suddenly it's the quintessential example of the Netflix effect, where suddenly everybody binged the show and the audience exploded in its last couple seasons. Better Call Saul doesn't do that, but it does very solidly for AMC, and kind of outside of AMC's zombie shows, it's one of the most solid performers they have going. I think there would be no reason why, given the combination of solid ratings and critical acclaim, why AMC would truncate the show in any way. So it really is just going to come down to when Peter Gould and Vince Gilligan say, okay, we've got this many episodes left. And, you know, that's just the good thing about doing a good and acclaimed show on cable, is that most of the time these days you will get the opportunity to end on your own terms. And so I trust that AMC will let these guys stick the landing, knock on wood.
Got it. Okay. Dan, hang on, okay?
Sure.
All right, Dan Feinberg is with us, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. Lots more TV to talk about. We'll take a break for the news, and we'll get back to it right after this. Welcome back. How's everybody doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio. We're here till 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. Triple Play Thursday. Get your requests in now. One artist, three songs. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. We're going to talk about nostalgia reunion tours and how good or bad they have been, and much more. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text. But let's get back to the conversation about TV. Dan Feinberg, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter, joins us biweekly to talk TV. Always a lot to talk about. You can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N, The Fine Print. So let's get back to it. Dan, welcome back.
Thank you, Nick.
So before the break, I mentioned that I was going to watch SNL. What did you have you watched the first two episodes of the season?
I have. I thought that the neither one I thought was particularly good. I thought the first episode had moments and yet really frustratingly wasted Adam Driver. And I think that Adam Driver has become a really good SNL host in like only a couple times.
Yeah.
I think he's just good at this, and that they gave him so little to do or put so little of quality around him is really frustrating. And then they had no clue what to do with Awkwafina last week. They didn't even, it was like they hadn't even watched Crazy Rich Asians. Like they had no idea of what this woman can do that's funny. And she's really tremendously funny and fairly versatile. And they gave her nothing to do this past week. I found that infuriating, honestly.
Yeah, I agree to a certain extent, but there were a couple of things in last week's show that I thought were hilarious. Particularly, I don't know why, but I thought that the dance off thing was hysterical, where they were dancing to the game show themes. I have no idea why, but I laughed my ass off during that. I thought it was hilarious. So
I thought it was decent. That's the kind of skit, though, that I would have expected to be in the home stretch of the show. The fact that they were leading with that sketch, kind of gave me an indication of where the rest of the show was going to go.
Yeah. Well, I thought the premiere was good. I thought, I thought Matt Damon was really funny, and it was a genuine surprise that he showed up. It was nice. I Dratch had three lines, but she was there. But I thought the cold open was. I thought they handled the cold open really well. And I thought that was really funny. It was better than the cold open this last week, even though they had a very short time. They had a very very short time to write it.
I'm mostly quite pleased that we haven't had to deal with Alec Baldwin in the first couple weeks.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I feel like I need to cross my fingers and that I just jinxed that one. I thought Matt Damon was good. I really, really wanted Mark McKinney to play Kavanaugh. To me, that's both a wonderful physical match and also a wonderful vocal match, and it wouldn't have been as big a quote unquote star. But to me, McKinney has exactly the sort of former party boy Muppet vibe that Brett McKinney has.
Oh yeah, yeah, I
and
can see
I,
it. Yeah.
I would have. Yeah, Brett Kavanaugh, not Brett McKinney. But anyway, I would have loved to have seen that. But no, Matt Damon was funny and fine, and that sketch was decent. And then, of course, that whole episode just became about Kanye, and at least Pete Davidson had a funny bit on that this past week.
Yeah, he did. Pete Davidson just kills it on Weekend Update. I just think he, especially with all the stuff that he's doing right now in his real life and how that's affected everything. I think his Weekend Update appearances are highlights. In sketches he's fine, but he really excels in Weekend Update. That's his strength, I think.
Well, he's not huge. I don't think he's versatile as an actor or as a performance. As a performer, it just happens that he's a very funny guy. I do think that the show is overestimating exactly how excited I am about his engagement to Ariana Grande.
Right, like,
I think that the fact that there were three different sketches in the first week that touched on it might have been a little bit more than I needed, but he's good. I like him. I think he adds something consistently quirky and weird and different, and especially when he's on Weekend Update.
Yeah.
When he does his thing there, I think he's very, very good.
Yeah. So this week is coming up on Saturday is Seth Meyers. I think that should be solid. Seth Meyers and Paul Simon, those are veterans from SNL. Hopefully they'll step up their game this week.
Yeah, it's sort of funny. You would figure they might as well under those circumstances. Like, I'm assuming Paul Simon will be in multiple sketches.
Oh yeah,
I assume. So at that point, why not just let him host and musical guest? It's Paul Simon; he can do whatever he wants. But I'll be interested to see what they do with Seth, because when he was on the show, he was head writer and he was on Weekend Update and all that, but he wasn't really a regular sketch guy. And so, you know, sometimes those people do very well when they come back. You know, Tina Fey obviously has been very versatile when she's hosted coming back, and that wasn't really her deal on the show. So I'll be interested to see what they do with Seth, because he's obviously very funny.
He is. And, you know, I mean, it will be interesting to see what they do, because, you know, early on, before he got the update spot, before he became the anchor, he was in some sketches, and a few of them were recurring, like the Jimmy Fallon and Seth Meyers, the two Irish guys who hosted the talk show, who would get drunk in the pub and cry.
God. Totally haven't thought about that one in 15 years. So, okay, what else? Give me more, because I can't remember any of them, but now I remember that one.
He was also, there was a like a blooper show that he hosted called Zing or something like that, where they did it a few times. Christopher Walken came on, and instead of like playing a prank, he beat the hell out of somebody with a tire iron and killed him. And that's supposed to be that was I can't remember what the name of the sketch was, but it was the name of the show, and it was supposed to be a blooper show, like a hidden camera blooper show. And Christopher Walken comes out and kills a guy in his sketch, in his bit. But that was something he hosted. And I'm trying to remember what imitate, because he did a few imitations. Oh, you know who he did, which we can't do now. He was what's the guy who hosted the Extreme Makeover show, the house makeover show. Oh, he's always shirtless.
Ty Pennington.
Ty Pennington? Yeah. That was a recurring sketch for Seth. He did that a few times, but you can't go back to that.
That was very odd. If they did that one this
yeah, yeah. Now I don't know. Do you think that maybe they'll let him sit behind the desk and have Che and Colin Jost like sit out a segment? And you know, because
I don't think they would let him take over
right
for one of them. I think for sure he will have some hefty capacity in Weekend Update, but yeah. No, I don't think there's any way that he would actually take either of their positions for a week.
Because I know when Poehler shows up all the time, they let her get behind the desk, and you know, and it would be nice if she made a surprise visit, and they did really. That would be kind of fun.
This would be not surprising. Yeah. I would, in fact, almost even expect. I would hope for that.
Yeah, I would too. I would too. And maybe they'll bring Fallon back. He's just, you know, he's downstairs, so bring him back and have him do the two Irish guys skit. That might be something.
And Fallon is always happy to drop by. I don't believe he ever tells Lorne Michaels. Lorne Michaels, no. So,
yeah, that's right. So it'll be interesting to see. So far, you know, I thought the first episode was pretty solid. I agree with you about wasting Adam Driver, but I also agree with you that he's turned out to be a surprisingly terrific host on the show. And there were a few moments in last week's episode that I thought was interesting, and I couldn't turn it off fast enough at the end. That was true. But I'm looking forward to this weekend. So, okay, let's get to, you know, a show that I'm seeing commercials for. And every commercial for it or every trailer for it makes me laugh out loud, and that's the Romanoffs.
Which is totally what Matt Waters going for.
No, I mean, but it cracked. I don't know. I have no idea why, but I've been laughing at the trailers for these things constantly. And this is Matthew Weiner's new show from the creator of Mad Men. And so tell me, this is an Amazon show. So tell me what it's, but this is an anthology thing, right?
It is an anthology thing, and it is really strange. And it is really uneven, and it is going to really polarize people. And a lot of people are going to simply straight up hate us.
Okay.
And I did not. Basically, the connective tissue is that these are eight stories about contemporary people who trace their lineage to the Romanov family, to the Russian royal family.
Right.
Period. Full stop. That is the connective tissue. There are one or two actors who make crossover appearances between, I believe, a couple episodes, but There is no through line. There is no eight episode narrative. Nothing. It is eight episodes. Matt Weiner directed all eight and wrote or co-wrote, I believe, six of them. And they're long. For whatever reason, Netflix has been able to get away with calling Black Mirror episodes movies, and I've ranted with you plenty about that.
Yeah.
But these are legitimately, basically, feature films he's making. They've only sent out the first three episodes or installments or whatever to critics, and they're all basically 90 minutes, between 84 and 90 minutes. And they're so long that Amazon is not dropping the series all at once. The first two episodes are premiering on Friday, and then it will be a weekly thing. So it gives one the opportunity to watch a weekly Matt Weiner movie. That assumes that you didn't watch or don't remember the actual movie that Matt Weiner directed, which was not very good. There are a lot of really big stars, but the tone varies widely between episodes. The locations vary wildly. The first installment is about a elderly Parisian woman whose relatives are hoping that she's going to leave them or her fantastic Parisian apartment, and instead she befriends the maid, who is a young Muslim woman, and her nephew is played by Aaron Eckhart. He's the biggest star in the first of the installments. And it's kind of more contemplative, and it's set in Paris and uses Paris nicely. The second installment is kind of a dark comedy with strange genre twists, a little bit like a late Woody Allen movie, because he's had several in recent years of people who have sort of given thought to infidelities and become racked with guilt and whatever. And it stars Corey Stahl and Janet Montgomery and Carrie Bechet, who is just wonderful, and Noah Wiley. The tone is all over the place, but again, it's got some good moments. And then the third installment is about an actress who goes to Austria to appear in a miniseries about the Romanovs, and the actress is played by Christina Hendricks, and the director of the miniseries that she's in is played by Isabelle Huppert. And that one was probably there's a lot of great casting. It's fantastic casting. If you keep watching down the road, people in upcoming installments include Mad Men veterans like John Slattery, actors like Diane Lane. It's a great cast. None of the three installments I've seen is consistent. They all have very good moments, and they have variable amounts of infuriating moments. And interestingly, the one about the actress going to Austria, which sort of takes on haunted house and horror elements and plays a little bit like a semi-comedic Roman Polanski film in some weird ways. To me, it was my favorite of them. It's also probably the most uneven of them. So it just comes down to whether the highs are high enough to exceed the lows. And some people are going to walk away probably from the first episode and feel so frustrated and annoyed with the darn thing. And the Parisian episode is particularly bloated. It is, again, just under 90 minutes. It totally could have been done in 45 without any problems. And basically, this is Matt Weiner being given no particular limitations and doing exactly what he wants to do for some reason. And there are definitely meditations on identity and heritage and people looking for nobility in their pasts, perhaps because their presents are disappointing. There are interesting themes that he's working out here. I look forward to watching more episodes, even knowing that I'm probably going to be ticked off and perhaps enchanted in equal measures. As one of the biggest Mad Men fans out there, I would love to say that this is anywhere near on that level. It's not, and I think a lot of people are going to get alienated by this one.
Okay, well, that's the Romanovs on Amazon. Okay, Dan, hang on, okay?
For sure.
All right, Dan Feinberg is with us, and we talk TV every 2 weeks. He's a critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. All right, let's take a quick break. We come back, more TV talk after this. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studios here till 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. It's Thursday, Triple Play Thursday. Get your requests in now. We'll play them later. It's one artist, three songs. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. That's all coming up. And also coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. All right. Welcome back, everybody. We are here. Dan Feinberg is with us, and we talk TV every couple of weeks. He is a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter, and you can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. Let's welcome Dan back to the show. Welcome back, Dan.
Thank you, Nick.
Hey, have you seen Camping, the new HBO show?
I've seen a couple episodes of Camping, and what I keep telling people is that if you thought that Hannah from Girls was one of the most annoying characters you'd ever seen on a TV show, Lena Dunham has gone out of her way to create an even more annoying character in Camping and gotten the lovable Jennifer Garner to play the character. And I think it's intentional. The question, again, is whether people are going to be tolerant of that, and it almost feels like an experiment, as if she's saying, oh, you thought this character was annoying when I played a variation on an annoying character. Let's see if you're more generous when the lovable Jennifer Garner plays it. And I think there's a challenge to that. It's a prickly show. My colleague Tim Goodman wrote the review, and he hated the show.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen two episodes. I don't hate it, but it is a hard show to warm up to, and it's a definite challenge to figure out how to embrace the Jennifer Garner character. The conceit of the show, for people who don't know, is that it's a woman and her husband. So Jennifer Garner and David Tennant plays her husband, and friends and relatives get together for a weekend camping trip, and things go askew, basically. And Jennifer Garner's character is extremely type A, also balancing a lot of very unusual health problems, and manages to overschedule and overprogram everything, and yet all of her friends want everything to be more easygoing and fun and relaxing, and she responds badly to that, and ideally hilarity ensues, but it's more kind of cringeworthy hilarity. It's an interesting show. I'm going to have to watch more episodes. So far, I've only seen two. I think it's only a 6-episode run. I think I'll be interested to see if the goal is, by the end of the 6th episode, to kind of trick viewers into finding affection for mm-hmm. this woman. And that's kind of the game of the show, is we're going to introduce this character who's going to have you pulling your hair out. And then by the end, we're going to make you understand and empathize. And there's no reason why that shouldn't work. Again, Hannah on Girls was a mighty annoying character, and I often felt a lot of warmth for her. I also often felt a lot of annoyance for her, but that was all part of what the show wanted me to do. And I think this show wants somewhat similar things. It's got a lot of very good people in its supporting cast, including the always funny Brett Gelman, who pops up in nearly everything and is very funny. Ione Skye pops up. When did you last see her?
Oh,
she's
wow.
doing fine.
Awesome. That's great.
See, there.
That's great.
It's all about finding the right hook. It is not a going right off the Romanovs here. It is not a show that is going to have the same response from any two people. And I think for a lot of people, it's going to be very hard to take the main character at all. I think there is going to be an audience out there, though, that's going to watch her and feel like she's very relatable. And I think that it will be interesting to see how those audiences get along.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Well, it's on my DVR. I'm curious about it. I was never a big giant Girls fan. Now, did Dunham direct the episodes?
I believe she and or Jenny Connor, her writing partner, wrote and or directed at least the first group of episodes. I can't speak for all six.
Okay.
But yeah.
All right. Well, we'll see about that one.
And it's based on a British show that I am not familiar with, though I've heard very good things about the British show, and it might be interesting down the road to seek that show out and see how they play differently.
All right. Well, that's interesting. So that's Camping, which actually will debut on Sunday on HBO. So, all right, Dan, hang on.
Sure.
All right. Dan Feinberg is with us. He's a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. He talks with us every couple of weeks. You follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. We're breaking for news here, and then we come back and we'll talk more TV with Dan. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio, and we are here until 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. The great Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive, and I will be joining the Steve Cochran gang as I do every Thursday morning at 6:20. We'll preview some of the movies coming out this weekend and talk about some entertainment, pop culture stuff, and that's all happening a little bit later on. Our phone number is 312-981-7200. Get your Triple Play Thursday requests in, one artist, three songs, 312-981-7200. We're also going to talk about reunion tours and nostalgia tours. New Kids on the Block are back. So we're going to talk a little bit about that if you've gone to any of those, or who would you like to see return. And then we got some other stuff we're going to be talking about as well. And we'd love to hear from you at 312-981-7200. You can follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show. Best way to stay connected is on our Facebook page, though. It's facebook.com/Nick D Show. Right now, let's get back to the conversation we're having with Dan Feinberg, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. He joins us biweekly to talk TV. You can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print. And let's welcome Dan back. Dan, welcome back.
Thank you, Nick.
All right. Now, I was never a Murphy Brown watcher, and I know that like the reboots are the thing now. So, have you watched Murphy Brown?
I have watched 3 episodes of Murphy Brown, which premiered a couple weeks ago to middling numbers, but then at least held those numbers the following week. So CBS probably went from somewhat disappointed to a kind of resigned shrug by the following week. And I would say that if you were never a fan of Murphy Brown in the first place, you definitely don't want to or need to check in. I vividly remember how excited my parents were when Murphy Brown premiered. And I was 10 or 11 or something, and I remember loving the show, watching the show with them, and really enjoying the show for about 5 or 6 years, and then it kept going for a while. And when I rewatched the episodes, it turned out I did have some nostalgia for these characters, for their voices, for the kind of anger that they have about the world and how it translates very well from the characters they were 30 years ago to the current Trump world. Yeah. The show has become a little monomaniacal. It's basically all Trump all the time at this point. I guess for plenty of people, that's what life is. And so, it did feel back in the day like Murphy Brown had a little bit more on its/her mind. The biggest change in the show is that her son, Avery, who was, when last seen, played by a young Haley Joel Osment on the original show, is now played by the much more studly Jake McDormand from Limitless and Greek. which is too bad, because Haley Joel Osment's been popping up in a lot of stuff lately, and he's really a funny, likable character actor at this point. He didn't become a leading man. Oh, well, how many of us really do? When he pops up in things, though, I go, oh, right, Haley Joel Osment's funny. Joel Osment's good.
Yeah, yeah.
But they decided they did not want to go with that. They decided to go with a hunk. And that's fine. I think that the relationship with Murphy and her son on the show is one of the better things about the new version. It's not remarkable. And I think that in a year in which there were 5 or 6 really good sitcoms out there, that I could say, okay, here are 5 or 6 better sitcoms than this, I would not necessarily have all that much positive to say about Murphy Brown. But I think in this particular year, seeing a show that premieres where the characters have their voices, the actors know their characters and play them in consistent ways, there's a big plus to that. And it kind of makes me understand the reboot culture in a different way, which is if the networks are too lazy or creatively bankrupt to come up with anything new, then it isn't just that there's comfort in a reboot, it's that it saves a lot of time because they don't need to find a way to write new characters. They can just write to the characters, and you know, that's it's not a creatively encouraging way to look at this, but looking at all the other new sitcoms and how disappointing so many of them are, I can appreciate some of the comfort in what Murphy Brown is doing.
Okay. All right. So there's Murphy Brown, which started now. I watched two sitcoms that I wanted to mention because they were so awful. So the first one is the, and I'm, you know what? I forgot the name of it, but it's the one that takes place at the old folks home with Martin Mull, and Vicki Lawrence.
That is the Cool Kids.
And David Alan Grier. And I watched the first episode of that. It was unspeakable. And, you know, and Charlie Day is like one of the creators on the show. And it's the cast. I mean, you can't argue with that cast. You know, all of those people. I love all of those people. But my God, was that terrible. Have you seen it?
It is a colossal waste of talent.
Yes.
There's no question. It is a colossal waste of talent. I do think I chuckled a couple times because Leslie Jordan's able to make things funny. David Alan Grier is able to make things funny. Vicki Lawrence is able to make things funny, but they shouldn't have to work as hard as they are.
Absolutely.
Someone should give them things that are actually of their caliber. And no, it's not that. If someone had not told you that Charlie Day created the show and asked you to guess based on that pilot who created the show, you would never in a million years get to Charlie Day as a possible creator
absolutely
of that show.
Absolutely not. That was 30 minutes that I'm never going to get back. I mean, I was astonished at how bad it was. And then not as bad, but also not good, was The Neighborhood. And again, lots of people in that show that I really, really, really like. And wow. And I know that you reviewed that in tandem with Happy Together.
Yes. And having only seen at that point one episode of each, and they're in an hour block on Monday night on CBS, so it's pretty easy. And basically, the review for both of them was the same. It's these are really, really talented people who deserve much better than this material that they're given. And then I did watch the second episode of both this week, and I feel as if The Neighborhood might have gotten a hair better, and I might be inclined to give it another episode or two. I think I am done with Happy Together. Happy Together has this really broad premise that relates to the fact that one of the show's producers, who's also a producer on your favorite late night show with James Corden.
Oh boy. All right.
But he had an experience where One Direction star Harry Styles lived with him and his wife for 18 months and hilarity ensued. So the premise is that this couple has a rock star move in with them. By the second episode, it didn't even know why that premise was funny anymore. Like it was like they were desperate to run away from it. So I think I'm done with Happy Together. The Neighborhood, the cast is so good.
Yeah, that's the thing. I've watched the first two episodes of The Neighborhood too. I didn't like either of them, but I watched them both, and I will probably continue to watch a little bit because you know there are moments in the show that you know, like you were saying about the Cool Kids, that you know you can't help but laugh because these people are so talented. But man, the writing is not strong at all on that show. So
it's really not. And yeah, I think there was something that Cedric the Entertainer did in this past episode that made me laugh. And Tashina Arnold is always good.
Yep.
I don't think they have a clue yet how to write for Max Greenfield. And that worries me because he is funny, and I don't think you'd know it from this. Beth Beers, I think, did something funny in this episode, but I don't remember anymore what it was, so it must have been really memorable. Honestly, the part of the show that I'm liking best are the two people who aren't the big name stars, the two actors playing Cedric the Entertainer's sons, Marcel Spears and Sean McKinney. They're to me the funniest people in the show, and they're the actors who, you know, I've seen them in things before, but Marcel Spears was in The Mayor last year, and I've seen Sean McKinney in several things. but they're obviously not the big ticket actors, and right. they're the ones who just seem like they're kind of playing original characters and being funny. And it's just a writing problem, and it's a writing problem for all three of the shows that we've talked about in this thing. These are all great actors. These yeah. are actors who have pedigrees that show that they can certainly be TV stars. They can be breakout TV stars. They can be hilarious, all of them, and they just need a little help, and they're not getting it.
No, they're not. All right, well, let's move on to something that I think you think is better. And that would be the debut of the CW's new show, All American. Tell us about this one.
In my review, I did dub All American the best new broadcast drama pilot of the fall.
There
and
you go.
That's because I don't know what the alternative is. Because this is the one that I would give a C+ B- to. So yay! it is based on the true story of Spencer Paysinger, who played ultimately in the NFL briefly for the Giants and several other teams. And it's the story of a young football player for South Crenshaw High who gets recruited to come play for a coach on the verge of losing his job, played by Tay Diggs, at Beverly Hills High. And wouldn't you know it, it turns out that Beverly Hills is different from Crenshaw. And and he doesn't instantly fit in his new neighborhood. And the show is so much trying to blend the DNA of Friday Night Lights and the OC. Mm. And, you know, if you're going to blend the DNA of two shows, those are two shows that I loved. And they're also, somewhat unfortunately, two shows that really had two of the best pilots, really, ever. I mean, the Friday Night Lights pilot, I've probably watched it 20 times.
Yeah.
It's a masterpiece. It makes me cry every single time.
Yeah.
And the pilot for the OC, you know, Josh Schwartz wrote it. Doug Liman directed it. It's hilarious at times. It sets up the entire show. It's such a good pilot. And this is not that good. It has a good and interesting fish out of water premise. It does some interesting things with shooting in Los Angeles. It does some good stuff in South Central, tries to get away from a few stereotypes. The main character has a friend from his neighborhood, played by Breezy, who was on Empire, and she's a high school character who's dealing with coming out of the closet slowly, or not really coming out of the closet, because the way she puts it is anyone who looks at her knew that she was a lesbian already, but she hasn't told their parents, and she's being picked on, and she's always had this friend of hers to support her, and now he's gone off to Beverly Hills, and there's some fresh stuff there. There are also weird dramatic contrivances. They don't do all that well with the football accuracy, and I've seen three episodes now, and it doesn't really feel yet to me like it's settling into its own voice. It still feels like it's being other shows. But it is a genre that, you know, I'm a sucker for. And I'm a sucker for underdog sports stories. A good high school show, that's the kind of thing that I will always happily watch. And so far, this is okay. And in a fall of awful stuff, okay starts to look a lot better, I guess.
Wow, that's just depressing.
Honestly, All American is fine, and the fact that I'm having to elevate fine to a position of high acclaim is something else, but it's got potential. This could be a decent show, and the CW has a handful of good shows that aren't its superhero shows, and given time, I think this is a show that could become something really solid, and so I hope it does, because it does have potential, and a lot of this fall's stuff has no potential whatsoever.
In terms of numbers for the new fall season, especially on the broadcast, are people watching these shows?
Some of them. Manifest on NBC is doing fairly well. I stopped watching that one after the second episode.
Me too.
I didn't like the pilot. I thought the second episode was just unbearable. Yep. I was like,
I did the exact same thing, Dan. I watched the first one, didn't like it. Watched the second one, not going back.
Yep, and that's just fine. You know, not everything, and it seems to be doing okay. And I assume that if it doesn't get a little bit better, eventually the numbers are going to start dropping. But NBC's happy with it. New Amsterdam today got picked up for a full season, back nine, and it's doing solidly. And I think it's not a horrible show. I understand the appeal of that kind of medical procedural, and I think that when you look at the success of something like Good Doctor on ABC, you see that there's an audience for it. So yeah. NBC recognizes it, and it, you know, it's a comfort place for people, and that's fine. What else is doing decently? The Neighborhood did okay. FBI has held its audience fairly well. CBS's FBI, and if you know, that's the kind of show where if it can't succeed on CBS,
right,
what is going to succeed, and right, where is it going to succeed?
Right.
But there's no breakout smash
right
so far. And there's also, for whatever it's worth, no out and out, we need to pull this off the schedule, it's a tremendous stinker, oy vey, disaster yet.
Okay.
So, but then again, at this point, networks aren't canceling things instantly anymore. They have to give things a little bit more of a shot. So
right,
just where we are in network TV.
There you go. All right, Dan, always a pleasure. People can read you at The Hollywood Reporter, follow you on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And we'll talk to you in a couple of weeks. Thanks.
Sounds good, Nick.
Okay, take care. Dan Feinberg, everybody. You can follow him again on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print and read all of his stuff there. F-I-E-N. Always great to talk to Dan. All right, we got to take a break here, and we shall return.